with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network. I am Bob Kincaid. This is what we call conversation radio, and we do it most every night of the week. And you are welcome to join in. Like I said, Friday on the Front Porch, by definition, a little more lighthearted, maybe not quite so horrifyingly serious, but it can get that way too. It just entirely depends on the... Well, on what you bring to the program, frankly, as opposed to, you know, old downer me. Right? Yeah. Where to go this evening? Well, I think an update is in order. Yeah, I know it's the dinner hour. We're just going to have to deal with that, aren't we? No, an update is in order because, lo and behold... I don't know exactly how this works out, but I do something, and then there it is on the national spotlight. It's just life out here ahead of the curve, I guess. That's all I can figure. So we'll get to an update. A couple of announcements for you. You know, there have not been many shows over the past month or so where I have not found an opportunity to bring to your attention this magnificent book that I have been reading along the way in fits and starts as time would provide. I read a lot of stuff every day, and I always enjoy being able to read something that I'm reading for pleasure as opposed to reading for what passes around here for work. And so I've made a lot of mention of this magnificent book, 1493, by Charles C. Mann, the follow-up to the bestseller, 1491. Well, guess what? Yeah, you might want to make sure that you're tuned in on Monday evening, because early in the program, we're going to have a conversation with Charles C. Mann about 1493, and I think, by extension, 1491. You'll want to be here for that. I expect it to be a delightful conversation, and we'll get that going pretty quickly. Let's see, other stuff to address. This has been a typical broadcast week of 5 days. They're designed to be that way, but it is the work that is going on in D.C. in relation to the unfolding human rights, human health disaster in Appalachia that has kept me away from the microphone considerably over the last month or so, and not next week. Next week is a totally ordinary broadcast week, but the week following, I will be in D.C. the 16th, 17th, 18th, and returning on the 19th. So hopefully we'll get a Thursday and a Friday show in, but it will be an interrupted broadcast schedule that will feature some reruns of some sort. Sorry. Well, goody. We've already got our first little bit of excitement. Dr. John writing in from New York. Charles C. Mann on the horn. Awesome! Yeah, I thought so too, John. This is, well, 1491, if you've never read it, is just a mind-opener, and 1493 has proven to be every bit as much and then some. That is, I think you will find the conversation fascinating, just because one of the brilliant things about the book is that it's hard to pigeonhole. Hey, look, it's history. No, it's not history. It's sociology. Well, yeah, kind of, but not really. It's ethnobotany. No, wait, no, not that either. It's a whole lot of it's a whole lot of books rolled up into one is what it is. Simply amazing. But anyway, no, next week will be another ordinary broadcast week. And then 3 days missed, the 16th, 17th, and 18th, and try to be home in time to get out of here, or not get out of here, but try to get out of there in time to get back in the chair here on the 19th. If not that, well, there'll be a Friday on the front porch. But that's just the long range schedule. There's probably going to be some travel in early May as well, and that's. It's all related to the ache campaign. If you want to find out a little bit more about what's going on, you can go to stoptheache.org. Ache stands for Appalachian Community Health Emergency. It relates to what's going on here with people's hearts, their lungs, their endocrine systems, their genitourinary systems, all going south at alarming rates as a result of the profiteering of the coal industry. And so that's what's been occupying my time. But if you want to learn about it, you can go to stoptheache.org. Okay. Let's see. A little bit of mail rolling in. Let's check in. Just check in real quick here. It's impossible to get a bad email from Kate out on the front range. And I heard from her from overnight. She said, "Bob, I'm listening to the Thursday archives. I'm so glad I wasn't online while you were live. You know, if it was anybody but Kate, I'd think, ooh, what'd they do?" But it just means that it has sent Kate to a thoughtful place where she would have liked to have called in, save for the fact that, you know, the phone company and people weren't cooperating. "I am listening to the Thursday archives. I'm so glad I wasn't online while you were live. I appreciate your passion, but realize this. We of the gentler sex have put up with this throughout the centuries. We know how we are disregarded and degraded. How we are a threat to those who have presumed, italicized and bolded, by the a threat to those who have presumed power, like the baseball star who encountered the police." That would be Tory Hunter in the story last night. "We have learned to go peacefully so as to not get shot, but that doesn't mean we are losing the war. We just aren't making much noise yet. It is not surprising to be compared to a caterpillar. After all, we can consume and destroy a tree in an afternoon, then wrap ourselves in a web and emerge as a butterfly. How scary is that?" Yeah, I can almost imagine, I can almost hear in the back of my head SCTV's Count Floyd saying, "Ooh, scary stuff." "We are out here quietly, amassing our forces, not to be reckoned with, waiting for those who are afraid, so very afraid, to implode. If they didn't fear us, why are we drawing so much of their wrath and vitriol? Sisters are waking up one by one, two by two, and that scares the crap out of them." "Interesting," says Kate, "that some of the uses of the 3D printer suggested were female body parts and blow-up dolls. Hmm? They can't control us, so they reproduce us on printers. That boggles the mind and makes me smile. Secondly, as long as the freaks are focusing on us this season, some of them are not lashing out at my queer boyfriends. It is well after midnight here on the front range. I must get some sleep," says Kate. "I have many trees to consume on the morrow." Yes, yes, as a matter of fact, she does. P.S., you have my permission to say vagina more than once a rant. Nothing to be scared of. Maybe we could make it a fad. Everybody saying it out loud. I agree.
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Safer.
Vagina!
I think Steve Martin had the healthy approach there. So too did So too did David Letterman.
Really emotional.
Yes, it certainly is, and well told, and quite moving. And I can remember, because I was sort of in California in 1975. I don't mean that I was actually in California in 1975. I'm not sure. vagina!
See? Twice in less than a minute, and nobody died. As Kate says, maybe we could make it a fad. Everybody say it out loud. Yeah. Yeah. So, thanks, Kate. Thanks for all of that. And I think it, you know, she offers up a lot of wisdom. The right wing is terrified of that which it can neither. And is this the distillation of it? What they cannot control, what they cannot destroy, and what they cannot understand. These are the three essential elements that are the very cancerous core of right-wing hate and right-wing fear. They can't control it, they can't understand it, and they can't destroy it. That works pretty well for me, really. Yes, indeed. A reminder, the PayPal button is working again over at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to John Fox for getting that thing back up and running. When you click, there's a default suggested donation that says $50. That is merely a suggestion. You can make it anything that you want to. It's not automatic, so just take note of that. Okay. And if you go to headonradionetwork.com, you will see where we stand in any on the contribute page. You'll see where we stand relative to monthly fundraising. You will see, for instance, if you look right now, that we are at $360. And this being the 6th of April, we should be closer to $625, since the 7th will be tomorrow, the 8th. And we ended March in the hole. So we do sincerely need your help. It would... Well, what we would have to do would be to get something on the order of $250 this evening to take care of the first, just to keep us on the even keel for the first week of April. It is there, though. headonradionetwork.com/contact contribute. If you just go to headonradionetwork.com and look for the tab at the top of the page that says contribute, click it, you'll find not only the PayPal button, but as well the snail mail address for those purposes as well. So thank you in advance. David in Tennessee noting, it's an old southern bromide, but it does apply to the Ripiglickens. What them yard dogs can't eat or fuck, they pisses on. That's pretty much it, isn't it? And I would say that your average Ripiglicken has, you know, there's a reason they're yard dogs. You don't let them in the house. No, no, no. Now, I mentioned an update. We had an extended discussion last night about this phenomenon called pink slime. I don't know. Texas Betsy, are you out there? Is pink slime kosher for Passover? I'm guessing not. But there's a great... Remember, everything the Ripiglickens do is predicated on fear. They're massive and just gut-churning fear. And now we've got it. We've got them rolling on the pink slime issue. I got a press release today from a terribly, terribly authoritative-sounding organization called the National Center for Public Policy Research. Why, my goodness gracious, it sounds like they're probably just up to their chinny-chin-chins in scientists and data and information. Nope, all they got's fear. The right, it was just another right-wing blast from some... I don't know how I get these things. And most of the time, they just serve to piss me off. But other times, you're kind of grateful. Or I am, at least. Because they let you know they're a barometer. The louder the monkeys in the monkey house screech, you know, comparing monkeys to Rippiglickens is probably unfair because I think far too much of monkeys. The more poo they fling, the more effective we know we are. Yeah, it was a right-wing blast email from some, you know, for all we know, it's the Koch brothers and some other bunch of deep-pocketed right-wing semi-proto-fascist freaks behind the National Center for Public Policy Research. It's probably one guy in a pair of flannel pajama bottoms in his basement somewhere. Food activists slime perfectly healthy beef and cost taxpayers in the process. I'm not thinking this is a winning argument for them. Why waste scarce tax dollars to switch to more expensive, higher-fat alternatives? Food activists slime perfectly healthy beef product in ridiculous bid to promote organic food agenda, charges health risk expert Jeff Steyer in Friday's New York Post. I don't get the New York Post. I tried to go and read the attempt at persuasion by this Jeff Steyer creature. This poo-flinging monkey, Jeff Steyer. But I guess the New York Post is behind a paywall. No way I'm paying. Sorry. Not happening. But I did wonder, you know, who in the is Jeff Steyer, right? Because when you see one of these things, you're inclined, well, he's a guy with a really big head. He's a senior feller at the National Center for Public Policy Research in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. I am a professional broadcaster, after all. And heads its risk analysis division. He was the associate director of the American Council on Science and Health. Why, that sounds terribly authoritative. He's appeared on World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, the Fox News Channel, CNN, MSNBC, and CNBC, as well as dozens of talk radio shows and in the Associated Press, Reuters, United Press International, the New York Times. Wow, he's got quite the little resume there. He worked for Rudy Giuliani. He's chairman of the board of the Jewish International Connection, New York. And he's got a law degree from the Benjamin N. Cardozo School of Law. My, oh my. And now he has fallen to defending pink slime. The pull quote from his piece in the New York Post was apparently this. Let's be clear. The meat product... You know what? I got real iffy about things called meat product the first time as a child I read the ingredients labels labeled to potted meat. Lucky for you, I don't have a can handy, so I will not share it with you. Let's just put it this way. It includes on that list everything but the word moo. Beef lips, beef heart, beef tail, beef hoof. You get the idea. Let's be clear. The meat product known as lean, finely textured beef. Well, see, that's your problem, Mr. Steyer. It's not known as lean, finely textured beef. It's known as pink slime. Because it is pink slime. Like I said, this is not what you call arguing from a position of strength. When your argument is, the meat product known as lean, finely textured beef does look gross. Yes, yes. Then he makes a leap that I don't think is entirely justified. But so does just about every meat product. Ever seen how they make pastrami? What? Pastrami? And this stuff is perfectly safe and almost certainly healthier than its likely replacement. But it's perfectly safe, and it's making our corporate donors millions and billions of dollars. Oh, please, won't you eat some pink slime? It's good for the bottom line. It's good for the shareholders. They get a quarterly profit. Our profit-to-loss earnings ratio is excellent. And it looks ooky. We know it looks ooky, but it tastes delicious with sweet taters. But I'm going to back up for a minute. Because he asked a question that I presume he intended rhetorically, but in my case, actually isn't. Because not only have I seen pastrami made, I have made pastrami. Pastrami, you start with a brisket of beef. One of the stringiest, sorriest cuts of meat on the cow. Fatty, it's got this layer of fat, and you got to trim it and everything. But you wind up with a pretty ordinary, albeit stringy-looking piece of beef. And having, you know, you rinse it and everything, and you pat it dry. And it's basically cured. It is corned beef. Because to corn beef has nothing to do with what you call it corn, we call it maize. There's nothing gross about it. There's nothing slimy about it. It's about salt curing a piece of beef. And pastrami then gets a little smoke added to it. And maybe a layering of finely crushed ground pepper. Maybe some other spices, depending on your tastes. At no point in the pastrami cycle is there an addition of anything like ammonia hydroxide. No, it's not there. So his comparison of pastrami making to, no, doesn't work. Because pastrami does not begin with cuttings of beef that have landed on the floor and fallen into various excrescences and right. Because that's why you have to clean it up with all that ammonia hydroxide. In the piece, Steyer explains that the U.S., quote, U.S. Department of Agriculture goes to great lengths to ensure that the National School Lunch Program serves appropriate food to America's kids. Obviously, the author of this piece has not eaten in a school cafeteria any time in the recent past. Having teenagers in schools, however, I am well familiar. You should see what passes for a salad bar here. It's pitiful, pitiful. Pitiful. And its scientists have been unambiguous. This meat product is perfectly fine. See, this is one of those sin of omission kind of lies that the right wing is so good at. He's not going to tell us in this piece that the person who passed off and put the stamp of approval on pink slime immediately left her job at USDA and then proceeded immediately into a high-dollar position with, imagine that, Beef Products Incorporated. You know, the people who invented pink slime. Because, again, it wouldn't lead to a successful argument ad bovinum? Is that what this is? Yet, according to New York City-based Steyer, the country's largest school district, New York City's, New York City's, is already ignoring the USDA's safety assurances and banning the meat by no later than September. They got a lot of nerve calling pink slime meat. At best, it is a beef product. You know, kind of like Velveeta is a cheese food product spread stuff. There's beef, and there's pink slime, and there is a taxonomic gulf a mile freaking wide between the two things. That's not fast enough for Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer, who's grandstanding for an immediate ban. He calls it garbage, as if there's actually something wrong with it. Well, there is actually something wrong with it. The fact that it's fallen on the floor and come in contact with bovine feces, which is why it has to be treated with the ammonium hydroxide in the first place. Something wrong with it. Other than the gross pink slime moniker. Soylent beef? They don't like pink slime. Can we call it Soylent cow? Ironically, this type of meat is exactly meat. See how they just try to slip it past you? No, no, Mr. Steyer, you filthy right-wing liar. Steyer the liar. Oh, that works. No, it's not meat at all. It's a chemical-laden goo. It wasn't so long ago, says Steyer, that food activists claimed they wanted our food to be more sustainable. Yet this stuff is an innovative model of sustainable agriculture. It's made with a process that safely and efficiently uses parts of the animal that were either discarded or used for lower value uses, such as animal food. Somebody get Mr. Steyer back to framing and messaging class. You don't win this argument by pointing out that it used to be dog food, that it used to be part of the old Roy down to the left side of Action Alley at the Wally World. And since the fat is melted out of the meat, melted out, rendered. Ooh, rendition. Wait, torture. See, this is a tough one for them. It is a veritable minefield of phrases you don't want to use in relation to things that you're trying to advocate. Before it's mixed into other ground beef, pink slime actually yields lower fat meals. Yay! Of course, by the time you add a little high fructose corn syrup to sort of boost the flavor, right? You get the idea. Some maltodextrin, perhaps. And despite all the hoopla, meat with so-called pink slime mixed in doesn't taste bad, says Steyer, who's not really sure if he's actually eaten any, but he's well paid. He doesn't have to. He can go to some nice little steakhouse somewhere in Manhattan and have himself a good steak dinner. It's proles like you and me, and more particularly our children, that he wants to eat it. Have the little proles eat it. They're not going to do anything but work for us as their corporate overlords anyway. It's been used for years, not only by schools, but by leading fast food outlets. Uh-oh, never should have said that neither, Mr. Steyer. Now I'm off to write to McDonald's and Hardee's and Wendy's and, yeah. And Arby's? I confess. We were out earlier today, and every now and then I get a hankering for one of those Arby's Jamocha shakes, especially now that I'm supposed to be watching my sugar intake. And so I got me one, and then I got to thinking about that beef on their, that so-called beef on their sandwiches. You know, they call it, or they want you to think of it as roast beef, but if you notice, in the advertising, it's a beef and cheddar or a shroom and Swiss melt or they do say Philly Angus beef because that's an entirely separate sandwich. But to get one of their regular sandwiches, roast beef is a pretty big stretch because it's sort of this compressed gelatinous goo that gets roasted and heated and thinly sliced. I'm thinking Arby's is probably using pink slime. What do you think? Should we write a few letters and inquire? Dear sirs, are you using... And we don't want to call it pink slime. They don't like it. Are you using lean, finely textured beef in your so-called roast beef product, spread product? I'll bet you they are. It's been used for years, not only by schools, but by leading fast food outlets and major supermarket chains. Like I said, if your hamburger comes in a plastic roll, it ought not be going home with you. If you can't talk to the guy who ground it, you probably don't want to eat it. If it didn't taste good, kids would have voted with their stomachs long ago. Again, I suggest that Mr. Steyer does not have children, at least not children in the public schools. You'll notice he's not advocating that private schools be compelled to feed this to the little private school children. Yeah, curiously absent there, wasn't it? I noticed. No, the private school children get to eat real food. Soylent Cow is only for children who eat public school lunch. Why waste scarce dollars to switch to more expensive, higher-fat meat that isn't any safer, asks Steyer. See, little prole children, they're not worth whatever tenths of a penny per meal it would cost to serve them real meat instead of pink slime. Little prole children aren't worth that to Mr. Steyer. No. That government money needs to go to, building boondoggle boats for the U.S. Navy or, maybe torturing some brown guy, right? Or maybe writing a monthly check to the next curveball. The answer, explains Steyer, after quoting a number of activists pushing the scare. It's not a scare, it's just a fact. I'm not scared of pink slime, I'm just disgusted by it. I'm as disgusted by pink slime as I would be if, say, somebody dropped my hamburger or my steak or my shrimp or my fish or my salad on the floor and then scooped it back up after having it gassed it down with some goddamn Mr. Clean and handed it to me. Now, here, Bob, it's perfectly fine. Because that's what pink slime is. These revolting pieces that we used to give, put into the dog food, we now put into humans after having gassed it with ammonia hydroxide, which is, in liquid form, a common household cleaning agent. For those of you with children, would you feed them food off the floor after you doused it in some mop water? You know, ammonia-laden mop water? Would you do that? Here, son, eat it. Here, baby girl. It tastes just fine now. Mommy's made it all clean with the mop water. But now we come down to the core of Mr. Steyer's argument, and that is this. He's afraid of us. Really? Afraid? Who would have thunk? Fear is the central tenet, the ultimate kernel, the base operating system of an even more base political philosophy. These people, me, you people, only want us eating grass-fed, free-range cattle, if we eat any meat at all. Scott Stringer may be able to afford that diet, but it's pathetic for politicians to kowtow to dishonest elitists. Really? Really? It's elitist now not to want to eat meat that's been doused in chemicals. That's elitist. Prole, eat your Soylent Cow and be happy to have it. Here, have a little high fructose corn syrup to light up your pancreas alongside. Aren't you grateful, Prole? What an idiot. And at the end, of course, the pitch for the organization and the pitch for contributions when they get all that they could ever possibly need from the Koch brothers or whomever the billionaire is that's behind them. Maybe, maybe Richard Mellon Scaife or one of those other right-wing weirdos. The National Center for Public Policy Research, founded in 1982, is a nonpartisan, free market, independent, conservative think tank. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. With over 100,000 recent supporters, it receives about 1% of its revenue from corporations. By what measurement, boys? By what measurement? And no support from government. Contributions to it are tax deductible and greatly appreciated, so that we can put out more godforsaken press releases encouraging you to get your kids eating pink slime. Okay. Sometimes in the world of the New York newspaper business, I can be easily confused. David in Tennessee noting, the New York Post comes with bird poo already on it so that one knows full well its intended purpose. It's a birdcage liner. David also noting, anything that involves the phrase enticing edible product, count on it being a bad food idea. Bob, tell us all about your experience with cheese products. No, it sends me to the hospital sometimes. And, yeah, of all fast food chains, David notes, McDonald's dropped pink slime 14 months ago in a little distributed memo that said that the pink slime stuff was not compatible with their quality standards. So if McDonald's didn't want it, what does that tell you? Really, if McDonald's won't serve it, it ain't food. Because God knows there's precious little beef in their hamburgers anyway. Which reminds me of something else here to get into in a minute. But, yeah. Pink slime, says Ray, would be a great new nickname for Dick Cheney. Oh, thanks, News Ninja Susan. So glad you're out there for us. So, and just as a sort of addendum, oh, by the way, David in Tennessee noting, if there aren't like a dozen extremely energetic punk bands named Pink Slime scattered around suburbia, we are doomed as a nation. Well, if they're not there yet, they're on their way, David. Tom Laskowy, writing at Grist, notes, you didn't think I'd miss my chance to weigh in on the latest round of pink slime discussions, did you? Rather than recapitulate the horror that is your favorite form of lean, finely textured beef, I'll instead point you to my favorite statement in defense of pink slime. It was given by American Meat Institute Director of Scientific Affairs Betsy Buren to NPR. This is not the same ammonia you'd use in cleaning supplies, explains Betsy Buren of the AMI Foundation. It's a gas. It's a different compound. It's a well-established processing intervention that has a long history of success. You know what? I don't like for my food to have interventions. Because generally, interventions don't happen unless something has already gone badly, badly wrong. Now, Bill, you've been intoxicated for 29 out of the last 31 days. And you're getting pretty close to drinking, you know, lighter fluid. This is an intervention, Bill. Okay? Sally, we found that bottle of pills in your pocket, and we all love you, Rush, and we think it's time for you to go back and talk to the horses in Arizona some more, Rush. That's an intervention. I don't want my hamburger should reach my plate without having had a crisis intervention. Jesus. This is not the same ammonia you'd use in cleaning supplies. But bless his little heart, Tom Laskowy wasn't willing to take Betsy Buren at her word. He said, granted, I'm no chemist. You know what? Here in the Horn audience, we have chemists. So we can sort of provide a little background, backup, backstop work for Mr. Laskowy. Granted, I'm no chemist, but my understanding is that the form of ammonia used in cleaning products is typically ammonium hydroxide, and the form used in pink slime is ammonium hydroxide. The only difference is the household cleaner is a liquid, and pink slime is treated with a gas. If the mere word Celtic inside an old Rod Stewart chestnut song can send my old DJ brain off and running. It's a gas. You expect me not to do this somehow? No, that's not Jumpin' Jack Flash. God! I hate it when a disc is somehow mislabeled and makes its way into my system. And then the next thing you know, you think you're playing Jumpin' Jack Flash and you get... Wasn't that Street Fighting Man? Yeah, that's what I thought. So that would mean that this just completely ruins the whole setup. Yeah, see? It's under Wild Horses. Hate mail for singing over top of Mick, but it's just how my old DJ brain works. Ammonium hydroxide, it's a gas. It's not a liquid. It's not like what's in your mop bucket. And Tom Laskowy also noting the same thing I did. When you have to defend your food production practice by saying, "Hey, at least we don't use household cleaners on it," you know you've got a big problem. I think it's bigger than even Mr. Steyer the liar can handle. In much more elegant terms, Mr. Laskowy boils it down thusly. He says, what pink slime represents is an open admission by the food industry that it is hard-pressed to produce meat that won't make you sick. Because I hate to break it to you folks, but ammonium hydroxide is just one in a long list of unlabeled chemical treatments used on almost all industrial meat and poultry. That's the operative word there, all. All. Let's see. Here are a few, according to Tom Laskowy at Grist, a few, not if this, what it is not exhaustive, a few of the things, the chemicals, that meat processors can apply to meat without even having to label it. That means it's been exposed to, yeah, calcium hypochlorite. That's also used in the business of bleaching cotton and cleaning swimming pools. Hypobromous acid. That's a germicide in hot tubs. DBDMH, or 1,3-dibromo-5,5-dimethylhydantoin. Hydantoin. I think I had an extra syllable there. That's also used at water treatment plants. And then there's chlorine dioxide, that they use to bleach wood pulp down to the paper mill. And it all gets used on meat. And why aren't we reading this on the label? Well, according to Elizabeth Hagen, the USDA's head of food safety, she said, just being honest, I don't think your average consumer probably knows a lot about how food is produced. Right. Just like people don't know how electricity is produced. They think that it comes out of the wall, just like, you know, meat comes from the grocery store. They don't know about the sickness and the poisoning and the death that is behind that wall socket, that switch on the wall. They don't know about it. And they don't know about the poisons and the ammonium hydroxide and the calcium hypochlorite and the, what the hell was that? Yes, 1,3-dibromo-5,5-dimethylhydantoin. They don't know about it. Mr. Laskowy continues, Andy Bilotti recently wrote a piece he called Beyond Pink Slime, in which he enumerates all the problems with industrial meat production that led it to this point. And in many ways, pink slime is the perfect embodiment of a food industry gone off the rails. In short, they took meat that was too dangerous to feed to humans, disinfected it so thoroughly that a block of the stuff will make your eyes water. I'm sorry, that's funny. And then celebrated the fact that they'd created a twofer. It's a food. It's a disinfectant. It's a dessert topping. It's a floor wax. We're eating old Saturday Night Live skits at this point in time. You realize that? The industry embraced their creation. We love it. So completely that around 70% of all supermarket ground beef now contains the stuff. You've only got a 3-in-10 shot. If you buy prepackaged ground beef at the grocery store, your chances are only 3-in-10 of getting some that doesn't have pink slime in it. I won't bet on a horse at the track at odds like that. But this goes way beyond hamburger. Uh-oh. As Tom Philpott points out, pink slime is used in a huge variety of products, including hot dogs, lunch meats, chili, sausages, pepperoni, retail frozen entrees, roast beef, and canned foods. By industry standards, it is nothing short of a food intervention success story. In other words, it has become as ubiquitous as its poison cousin, high fructose corn syrup, is over in the other aisle in the grocery store. Aisles. The irony, of course, he says, is that the 2010 debate over pink slime brought to light evidence that this treated meat product is not nearly as reliable a disinfecting agent as its maker asserted. It was likely those indications that led the fast food industry, in most ways farther ahead of the food safety curve than supermarkets or school food providers, because remember, we're still putting downer cattle on the lunchroom tray for kids to eat, you know, the ones that are so sick they can't stand up, that have to be picked up with a forklift, yeah. And now, or school food providers, to abandon the ingredient late last year, and now that the mainstream media has taken notice of pink slime, even the USDA has had to back off its wholehearted endorsement for it in school lunch. Of course, that endorsement only came when the beef people, you know, wrote a check in the form of giving a job to a former administrator. So the walk away on this is, he says, don't let the appearance of a back and forth debate fool you. This is not one of those issues, as is often the case with anything being advanced by right wingers. This is not one of those issues where there are two equally valid sides to the question. Pink slime, he says, truly is worse than other forms of disinfected treated meat, since the trimmings used in pink slime are known They're known from the minute they go in the mop bucket. They are known to harbor pathogens at high levels before treatment. Should it disappear from store shelves, however, we can rest assured the meat that remains will continue to be treated with other industrial chemicals, because that's pure and simple the only way the industrial meat complex can prevent its products from making people sick. That's where we are. That is evidence of the extremely tenuous nature of the effort to feed a planet of several billions of people. We're eating everything but the moo. See? Yeah, David, you get it. Interventions? Charlie Sheen has interventions, not my fucking lunch entree. Precisely my point. Patty, out on the high plains. Just wondering if I'll be needing to raise our elitist cattle prices, or do I need to notify the cows of their elite status first? If I'm confused, I may scare them. Just saying. Hugs, Patty. Just don't let him see the mop bucket, Patty. I mean, that's just too much. And yes, Ray, you're absolutely right. You can't always get what you want, even when all you want is Jumpin' Jack Flash and you get Street Fighting Man instead. David notes, once in high school, a bright kid asked as we toured a dairy farm, which part of the udder, tit, has the chocolate milk? No, really. David's not kidding. That particular genius went on to become a federal judge of august reputation and fine standing in the Knoxville, Tennessee community. Really? Yeah. Yeah, noting also, does David, making people sick. Bob, that's making people sick in the short term. The long term, that's another question. Jack in Shreveport, the earlier food chemical thing. Bob, let's not forget the story that we heard some years earlier that carbon monoxide was used to improve meat's color. Oh, yes, I remember. And I used to wonder what that label meant over in the Wally world where it said that their ground beef, which arrives by a big truck, not by a series of tubes, because Wally World long ago, in order to prevent even one of its stores having union-represented meat cutters, eliminated meat cutting at every one of its stores. So all of its meat comes in, and I mean, you can't so much as get a ham sliced at Wally World. You want to slice that thing? Take it home, slice it yourself. Don't need no union. But all their hamburger has a label on these vacuum-sealed packages. It says, beef with flavor added. And it's just laying there. It's hamburger. It's raw hamburger. And you're thinking, what the kind of flavor? What, garlic? Uh-uh. Pink slime. Carbon monoxide. Ammonium hydroxide, calcium propionate, on and on and on. So that's how we get our Friday on the Front Porch started. Where you take it is entirely up to you. You know, of course, how to reach the program. The number 87, the lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. You can email the program, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Two and a half minutes past the hour. Ray writing in, if you only knew, Bob, if you only knew... When I was meatpacking, there was no excuse for a sick day. So if you had the flu, you stood at your station and drip, snot, and sickness all over the meat. Between that and the strays we put into the pet food, Pink Slime sounds pretty good. You know, it was you, Ray, last night who wrote, if you're trying to get a cooking show, Bob, this is no way to do it. And I can't help noting, Ray, that you're not helping again. And see, there it is. Same, yeah, the same principle at work. David noting, both here where I live, both H.G. Hill and the local Food Lion have folks that will cut or grind or make any nice cut. I like that. Local scoreboard. And then there's the hanging bacon. Oh, dear God, don't talk about the bacon. I'll be thumbing my way to Tennessee just to get the bacon. Oh my God, hanging right there in the store, huge slabs, beautiful. They'll take the skin off it for you. Oh, yeah, yummy. Kate noting, my food hasn't been intervened upon. I guess I'm blessed. My eggs come from 5 miles away. My spuds and most other vegetables come from the Hutterite colony, 40 miles from here, and most of my meat comes from three local friends who hunt. I have bison, elk, and deer in the freezer. When I get down to three packages, I call them and they bring it to me. Hardly any fat and low in cholesterol. 20 feet south of my parking lot, our organic community garden beds are getting prepared this week. Lots of moisture with the 3 inches of snowfall this morning. It's fenced to keep the deer and the yard dogs out. Signed, Kate on the Front Range. Yeah, and then little reminders of civilization are very important. Very important indeed. Randy from PA noting, anhydrous ammonia, NH3, is the caustic alkaline gas in question, but rarely occurs in nature. It almost immediately combines with air, moisture, or water to form ammonium hydroxide. The water dilutes its reactivity. But like normal table salt, NaCl, combined with water, its chemical properties don't change all that much. It should be noted that alkalines taste bitter, while acids taste sour. And that's all true, too. And anhydrous ammonia is in big pressurized tanks, which, if they rupture, kill entire communities. Just say it. This in from News Ninja Susan. She said, Bob, you should be getting notified that I hit PayPal with a $100 contribution. I challenge the rest of the listeners to do the same. If I can do it, so can they. I even had to replace my stove this month. So no excuses! Thank you, Susan. And, you know, we could... with just a little bit more, we could finish dead even with the month, with the first week of April, and it would be sincerely appreciated. The PayPal button is right back up there at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, as is the snail mail address. 5 past the hour, and let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John in upstate New York. How are you?
I'm good, John. How about you? Well, I mean...
I'm doing terrific.
You're probably not feeling much like dinner right now, but apart from that...
Well, no, it's really funny, and this is like, you know, the way that this works. I actually have a K-12 pink slime evangelism anecdote for you from today.
Oh, goody.
So we can continue the theme. My wife and I just this afternoon were at the local grocery store of choice. And if I could say the name of it, I'd like to, because it's a good store.
Sure.
It's called Wegmans. And they're mostly up in the Northeast. They're getting down into Maryland, but Wegmans is the company. They're headquartered in Rochester, and they're really solid. Like they're always on the list of top 10 best places to work, and they pay their workers a decent wage, and people stick with them for 20 years just because they're decent. It's just a good company, family owned.
And how about that? They're not in Alabama, Stan.
Well, there's that. I imagine up here they're unionized. I don't know if that's across the board or not, but anyway. So anyway, we were at the local Wegmans, good store to shop at, and we were looking at the ground beef display, and there was a sign there, and it said, as of April 13th, Wegmans will be phasing out the use of lean, finely textured beef in its ground beef products, you know, in response to, consumer demand or whatever. And we were kind of reading that, and my wife says, wow, look at that. They've got a no pink slime warning label on their beef. That's awesome, and they're phasing it out. Way to go. And as she says this, there's a guy next to us, and I didn't know who he was, you know, older gentleman. And he kind of looks over, and he says, excuse me, ma'am, what? What did you just say? And she said, no pink slime. And he's like, what is pink slime? And so we had
missionary moment.
I know, right? Exactly. It's just this little 30-second explanation of, you know, what it is and that people are really against it and it's bad and, you know, we don't want it in our beef, you know, because we don't need that crap because ground beef ought to be ground-up cows, you know, with apologies to the vegetarians. I completely understand. But anyway,
yes.
So we do this, and the guy says, wow, and so what, they actually used that word? And I kind of pointed at the sign. I said, well, no, they used the focus group market-tested version of the word, but that's what they're talking about. And so he had a huge belly laugh at that, and then he kind of did a little double take, and he put his little package of ground beef back, and he said, I think I'll wait till after the 13th.
Yeah, no kidding. And you know, Steyer the liar in that right-wing blast that I got earlier today, he intimated that somehow it was us tree-hugging, grass-fed, free-range, organic, beef-eating, liberal, progressive, I don't know, maybe we're Islamo-fascist too, and we have a deep-seated hatred of white people and Kenyan colonialism, for all I know. But that we invented that word. The fact of the matter is, that word was invented by the people who invented the stuff. Because this whole thing blew up when a scientist, you know, a food scientist type, finally, sort of like Wendell Potter did with the insurance industry, said enough already and walked away and told the world about pink slime. And he said, and we called it pink slime. So it's not like something the liberals cooked up.
No, that you know, you got to love those right-wing road to Damascus moments. You just sort of wish they would do it a little bit earlier, but, you know, it's all good. And exactly. I mean, you know, there's no company out there that's more, you know, left-wing, tree-hugging, hippie, you know, love everybody than McDonald's. So, I mean, you know, obviously.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I went in for my smoothie today, and, oh, dude, you want whipped cream or not? They're just, you know, they were back there kicking the hacky sack around. Right, sure.
So are you just going back and testing the smoothie thing just to see if sometime it actually works?
You know, I was actually at a different McDonald's, and they have no problem with their smoothie machine. What it is this McDonald's that always, where there's always an issue and where there are now chickens literally scratching in the shrubberies. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. this is down in the heart of an area not far from that really, really nasty mountaintop removal operation. I mean, there's the oldest mountaintop removal job in Appalachia is just a stone's throw. The US 60, the highway that runs down by the Kanawha River as you head toward Charleston, they keep having to put up those concrete jersey barriers. You know what I'm talking about, John?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because the mountains keep blowing out. The mountains are literally coming apart, and this is one of these poor, benighted little communities, and you should. I mean, if you go into McDonald's, the lid on the smoothie machine, it's a plastic lid that fits nicely down over the basin where the ice goes. Okay. Well, this thing at this McDonald's has chips in it and chunks out of it and cracks in it. And they are constantly perplexed, and their supply chain is apparently compromised because, like I said, you know, yesterday, in a hurry, going down the mountain, Doodle wanted pineapple mango, Ferg wanted strawberry banana, and I was the odd man out who wanted the wild berry. So there you go. I get the wild... Oh, we ain't got no wild berry goo.
Yeah. But that's one of those... It's probably a safety feature, right? It's like if the lid isn't totally engaged, it won't make. And that's the problem. Like, we have a television.
Right, because there's a grinder. You know, ice is not actually easy. Ice is the doom of many a blender.
Yeah.
It's hard to... And so down in the bowels of this thing... Probably shouldn't say bowels. There's an ice grinder in there of mammoth industrial proportions, so the thing won't turn on unless the lid is on correctly.
Yeah.
And this is what proves to be their, I don't know, it's their bete noir, or their bete midler for that matter. But they have no end of troubles. I wish I'd never seen that smoothie machine.
Well,
it's pitiful.
Well, that's wild. I mean, kind of got a couple of things, you know, sort of all over the map. But I don't know if you saw this. This is I don't know why this isn't a bigger story, why people don't hear about this. But a couple months back, there was a story. I think I sent it to you about a guy from they said West Virginia first, but now they're saying Georgia, who worked for one of these hydrofracking companies in Pennsylvania, and he was caught dumping what they call fracking mud onto state game lands in PA.
Right, you know, right. Spike mentioned that as well. Went out into state game lands and just dumped the truck.
Yeah, just dumped the truck, and it was really unclear like why he did that, because I guess they have procedures for this sort of thing. But anyway, he got caught just dumping it in the middle of nowhere, and we had a piece in one of the local papers a couple days back where he basically pleaded guilty to it. He's going to be sentenced. So it's just. I mean, it's what, you know, we knew would happen, but I just think that this is one of those cases where I think people in PA who are, you know, all about, oh, yeah, fracking's a great thing, it's a good thing to bring some jobs, I mean, wouldn't they sort of reconsider this? Because these are state game lands. These are where people in PA who do this a lot go out and hunt their deer in the winter.
Right,
whatever,
right, because,
and that's
what, I mean, PA...
They like that sort of thing.
PA is as crazy about going hunting as any southern state. And maybe more so.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I've never understood how a guy with a gone hunting sticker or a gone fishing sticker on his truck can have next to it a Friends of Coal sticker in this state. You know, what are you going to fish for? Three-headed trout? I mean, Ferg.
Well, the issue is very similar. You guys deal with, you know, buried up streams from mountaintop removal. You know, up here the issue is water. And, I mean, there's so much evidence that the contamination is really intense and really pernicious. And the people that, you know, the conservation side that, you know, we like the outdoors, we support it, that's great, you know, awesome. But you can't say that and then be in favor of this sort of destructive process.
Exactly. Is it human nature, John, that allows people to just compartmentalize these things, you know? I sure do love the peace and quiet of going out. Because here in West Virginia, a day spent fishing for native brook trout, it's great fun. I mean, it's like stalking something, because it's one of those situations where if your shadow passes across the little stream, you're done fishing for the day, because the fish then knows you're there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's real skill involved. It's almost a religious experience for, you know, non-religious folks like us. And yet, at the same time, you can say, yeah, but, you know, America needs coal, never realizing that the coal's getting on a boat and going to China and India and Russia. And they can harbor this stuff in their heads without them exploding, and I can't do that.
No, what I really think it is, and it comes back to, I guess, what we're talking about last week, is I think that it's the difference between what is in your mind a very real and immediate and pressing fear and what is a sort of subconscious, not really visible, but still much more real kind of fear. It's like, we need to, don't take our guns because that's, communism and Nazism, which is ridiculous, but, you don't take our guns away. We need to do our hunt and we need to preserve our way of life, which I'm all for. You know, that's the fears that Obama's going to take your guns, going to stop your hunting. But the real fear, the actual fear, is you're not going to have any deer to hunt because their environment's been polluted and you got freaking purple squirrels running around from drinking fracking water.
Yeah, really. And for those who think you're kidding, purple squirrels are real.
Yeah.
And that comes, they think, from some sort of chemical exposure to fracking stuff?
Yeah, that story got disappeared real quick, but there was a professor type who said that probably means that he was drinking this organic compound that exists in hydrofracking fluid but doesn't exist in nature. There's no reason like a squirrel would turn purple unless it's drinking this chemical that only is found on land in hydrofracking fluid. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's gone. That's history. Like, the purple squirrel is free, and it's not in the news or anything. Just
yeah,
like,
wasn't it interesting that the purple squirrel was returned to the wild before so much as a blood test could be run on it?
Yeah, I don't want to go into blood tests and all that question. But yeah, no, of course it is. We're naturally, being a purple squirrel, it's going to get predated instantly. So it's out of sight, out of mind. But we'll have a purple coyote, right?
Yeah, or a purple red-tailed hawk, which will be rather an interesting combination.
Exactly. But that's the thing. I think that's what it is. I mean, compartmentalization, maybe you can call it that, but it's real fear versus fake fear.
Well, and see, Ferg went fishing with a buddy the other day for trout, and they're stocked trout. We can't have naturally reproducing stock trout streams in West Virginia anymore because we poisoned all the streams where they spawn.
Right.
So the stock truck comes along and drops a few fingerlings and a few biggins in and whatever. And so he was all proud. They brought him home. We were going to fry him up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they cleaned him, and one of them, the meat was the color of salmon.
Ooh. Ooh, no, it shouldn't be.
Trout is not supposed to look like salmon. And for that matter, since I mentioned salmon, salmon's not that color either, because a lot of salmon gets artificially colored now.
Right, because again, what they usually eat has been covered up by dams and stream fill and that sort of thing.
Right.
I don't remember what it was, but yeah.
Yeah. But no, when we saw the orange trout, we decided we were not having pan-fried trout that evening. And I was all ready with the brown butter and everything. It was going to be yummy.
Oh, that's a drag, too, when you get set for something. But no, it's probably the right decision. Hey, speaking of salmon, just real quick, would you drink smoked salmon-flavored vodka? Are you there?
Yeah, I probably would. I'd taste it.
Yeah, I'd probably taste it, too. I saw it at the liquor store today. I thought that was weird.
No, see, but, I can't sit that. No, I don't want a pint. The most I'll go with smoked salmon-flavored vodka is maybe one of those little airline bottles.
There you go.
That's just a box on the list. Now, way back in time, European folks used to, and especially in Eastern Europe, there was a vodka that had a long piece of, looked like hay in it. And it was called buffalo grass or something. And it imparted a tangy herbal quality that I just loved, and I've never seen it since. But that was wonderful stuff. They were doing flavored vodkas long before that fad ever kicked in over here.
Yeah, it's a real thing. I just I saw that, I was really taken aback, and I didn't.
Was there a label about whether or not any smoked salmon had been injured in the process or anything like that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it was allegedly bottled in Alaska, so they probably injured smoked salmon up there just to, for the fun of it.
They probably had Sarah Palin just whacking them in the head back there in the distillery somewhere.
Oh, yeah, just tossing them in a wood chipper. Well, listen, I've kind of been all over the map, but I wanted to say before I went, I can't believe you got Charles C. Mann. I'm really excited about that. That's going to be Monday early, you said?
Yeah, we'll probably be getting him on about 6:15 Eastern time.
Oh, man, that's going to be so awesome. You've been doing a great job talking it up, and I got to say, I know a bit about of which I speak, but you are a really great interviewer. Last week in D.C. really drove that home, so I'm really looking forward to hearing this because I know the questions and the answers are going to be compelling. So,
well, the problem is I don't even I've been thinking about this for a while now, John, and I don't even know how to begin to order the questions because from page one to end of book is nothing but a series of questions. But that's the mark of a great piece of writing. So we'll get to as many as we can, and if folks who have read the book or want to preload some questions, you know, it might be a nice thing to, you know, if you want to send me questions via email, the bobkincaid@gmail.com address, they'd be more than welcome, and I'll certainly get them into the conversation. I'm excited about this, too.
Oh, it's gonna be great radio and just super fascinating, and I'm jealous you get to speak to him because I would love to have a conversation with him also. So it's gonna be great. Really excited.
Thank you, John, and thank you for the compliment. Sometimes in those, you know, these people sit down across from you, and you've got, you know, and you're on this, especially in these DC things, you're on this really, really tight schedule, and after a while they'll come around, and they'll start making hand motions at you. And, you know, dragging their fingers across their throats like, cut it, cut it, cut it. You know, I got to get him to the next guy. And you're going, but I'm not done. So, you know, you want to make sure that you try to get some of the basic information out there. And, some of the folks I got to talk to in D.C. were just amazing people.
Yeah, absolutely. This format spoils us a bit because it's more long form, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, you did a fabulous job.
Well, yeah. Thank you very kindly.
I'm going to get out of the way here and let some other folks talk. But it was good talking to you and looking forward to Monday.
All right, take care, John.
All right, cheers, Bob.
Bye now. Dr. John calling from New York. Sure. Smoked salmon flavored vodka. I'm down for a shot. I think I want it really, really cold though. Wouldn't you? Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
There.
Hey, Susan.
Would you like to hear a label that it's just the exact opposite of the one I sent you?
I was going to say, didn't you do enough with the potted meat?
Well, this is the exact opposite. You know, most sausage, you don't want to really look at the label.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're okay. This is a sausage, and I've had these before. I get them on a regular basis. And it's from a company called Idel's, and it's their artichoke and garlic sausage.
Wow, you want to spell that first, Idel's?
Idels. They have a website. You can even order it over the web. Here's their ingredients. Chicken, artichoke heart, water, salt, citric acid, garlic, sun-dried tomatoes, roasted garlic with olive oil, spice, thyme, parsley, celery powder, and a pork casing. That's it.
I'm down with it. My God, I didn't have dinner before the show. It sounds really good. Is that an Oregon company or somebody up that way?
No, they're based in San Francisco. But the thing is, they've got this huge line, this part of their fully cooked line, which you can order over to the internet and they'll ship it to you frozen.
Oh, I think I'm going to be looking this stuff up.
That's the way I get it.
One of the reasons that I hate to see what I fear to be true, that our little grocery store up the road is going to go away, is that what they do over the course of the week, you know, they cut pork chops and they cut loins and they, you know, all that kind, and they save back their trimmings, and at the end of the week they make sausage, and it is delicious sausage, and it's not as fatty as the stuff in the plastic casing, and I can, you know, I don't have to have an ingredients label because I can stand there and watch the guy make it.
Yeah, this stuff, let me see, according to the label, total fat 11 grams.
Oh, see, that's beautiful.
That's full fat.
For a sausage, you're darn right it is.
Cholesterol, 75 milligrams for one sausage. That's really good. Admittedly, it's high in sodium, but then all sausages is high in sodium.
Sure it is, exactly. But Idel's, yeah. I'm gonna go looking now. We'll probably get a note from from Northern California listeners going, oh yeah, I eat it all the time, it's delicious.
here's the neat thing. They also have an organic line.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, and these people, the stuff is just, okay, the artichoke and garlic, nummy. They've got a, and these are, I'm going from personal experience here. They have a roasted garlic and Gruyere cheese. I don't know how you pronounce that.
Yeah, Gruyere.
Gruyere cheese. That's numb. Sun-dried tomato with mozzarella cheese. That ends up, that tastes like pepperoni. And they're all made.
Okay, this is fast approaching the level of torment, okay? Did I mention I did not have dinner before the show? I mean, you know Agnes is on the road, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, she I looked at her before. I said, you realize I probably won't eat till you get home. And she kind of chuckled, and then she said, you're not kidding, are you? I said, it's peanut butter and crackers till you get back, and Lord of the Flies. That's why it's in the show post.
Yeah, I know.
Ferg, William, and I are here on our own, and it could get very unpretty very quickly.
They've also got recipes up there, and you might want to check it out. It is sold in stores, and they have a store locator. You might be able to, I don't know.
No, I'll get Idell's sausage in the local grocery store here about the same time that I get a Culver's hamburger joint next to it.
Well, that's what I gave up. A few miles down the road that sells a few of their line, not very many, and I just said, bag it, I want what I want, so I just went online and started ordering.
That's
so
awesome.
So every now and then, a huge box full of frozen sausage.
And, you know, David in Tennessee just noted, 11% fat in a sausage, for God's sakes, please don't overcook it.
It's already cooked.
Oh, that's right, so you're just heat and serve.
Now, some of it is not pre-cooked. That they won't ship to you. Sorry. They don't want to run the risk of people dying.
Nice of them, I think.
The pre-cooked stuff, they'll ship it to you, no problem. Well, I can't blame them. You know, the lawsuits would be bad. But, they also have meatballs, breakfast sausage minis. Oh yeah, all sorts of good stuff.
Well, I'm gonna find the website and go a looking.
It's www.idells.com. Let's face it, I put you on to the Republic of Tea. This is the equivalent only when you.
Yeah, there's a reason your email address has trouble in it.
You bet.
That.
Oh, and by the way, if anybody wants to get a stove, a fancy stove, plan on shelling out at least $2,000.
Yeah, I know. Every now and then, when I'm in Lowe's getting a few more shingles to do another temporary patch job. I can't help walking through the kitchen appliances department, and geez, I'd like a new refrigerator, but $2,500 bucks for a fridge?
They're not the least bit bashful. Mine went out, and like I said in that email, I have to replace it, and I got.
Well, now the refrigerators have name brands on them that ordinarily I associate with cars and motorcycles. And stereos.
And I got the cheapest one I could get, $700.
Gas or electric?
Gas. No, electric. Gas is even more expensive.
Ugh. I think it's
you
all...
Pay attention to what color it is, because that can cost you a couple $100.
Yeah, and you know what? Remember that god awful avocado color from the 70s?
That was just.
I think it's coming back. For extra.
Avocado and harvest gold.
Oh, yeah, goldenrod, harvest gold, yeah.
Oh, God.
Exactly. Well, enjoy the sausage, and thank you very much for the challenge out there. That there have been some very good responses to it, Susan. I appreciate it.
Very good. And people, check out the sausage. Not everybody is going the green slime route. A lot people like the idols, and there are other people. They are going the quality route, and they're getting business. That's why I mention them, because if they're going to do this, let's support them.
Right. It reminds me of our great Nancy's Yogurt campaign.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. Susan, have a wonderful weekend.
And may you enjoy your peanut butter.
Delicious on saltines, I got to tell you.
Oh, here's another product, Laughing Cow Cheese.
Oh, I love Le Vache Qui Rit. Yeah, I love the Laughing Cow. Good stuff there.
Definitely.
All right. Take care, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday. We made it. Another one. Oh, my goodness. And you know how I feel about food.
No. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and once you go that route, it's the same thing like a nice stove. You know, you get a nice stove, you can't. You know, and I mean, $2,000, if you can find a good one for that, you know, certainly go for it. But if you can get a little more, do what you can do. I mean, you won't regret it. If you can have, you know, the kind of oven where you can set it so low it won't burn the chocolate. And oh, I mean, this, you know, nice tools are nice to have. We all know this.
Right.
You know. Save my butt. That's all I can say. My front load washers with the cloth diapers with the girls. That saved us. That paid for itself.
That saved you a small fortune, and you know you did a friendly thing for the landfill.
Yeah, you know, that's. I don't want archaeologists digging that up. Dig up something else. I don't know.
Yeah I don't want to. You know, that's so true. I don't. 500, 1,000 years from now, I don't want to be the archaeologist on the landfill dig. I found another one of these things, Doc.
One of these eggs. Amazing. What an interesting life form. I mean, I don't know if you caught my email. I had sent it to you during the opening monologue, but it appears the friends of Cole over there have some things to say about wind. Of Dude. Course, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what I mean. But I don't know if you got a chance to peruse that.
I hadn't yet.
It's the onion, laying it out as only the onion can. It's just, you know, it's brilliant. It's just beautiful. And what other news do we have today regarding energy? Oh, yeah, solar is now parity in California and renewables. So, and then not only that, it costs 8 cents to transport a kilowatt hour versus conventional, which is 15 cents. So, it's right. It's here. Knock, 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 knock. Pizza's here. You could smell it through the bag. It's here. Boom, 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 boom. You know, I mean, this is the kind of news that we need to be focusing on. This is the kind of stuff, you know, these Republicans trying to pass right to work. These Republicans here in Wisconsin. What did he do? It wiped my mind. It wiped it. I just cannot even fathom. What did he, oh, yeah, that's right. Equal pay. Walker came in and got rid of that little, you know, equal pay, you know, women and men and da 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 da. Yeah.
Yeah, just, because that was communism.
Well, that's why when they call this house for 3 questions, they're only getting 2. Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised he made it past that one. You know, I could call again. Come on. You know, I mean, and you know, I love when the Democratic people, they'll sit there and talk to me. I'll be on the phone for, you know how I am, I'm sorry. I'll be on there for an hour. Because every question they ask, I have to give it context. You know what I mean? This is what you mean by this question. So I want you to understand exactly what I know. So there's no excuse when I hear about these surveys in 6 months in the release. I want it to be as detailed as you possibly can get it. Because that's what we need. We need better information. You know, I mean...
Yeah, see... when they talk about it on the for-profit media, Albert, and they talk about those low-information voters, you can always take pride when you hear that in saying, hey, honey, that's not us. We're high-information voters.
overload. But, you know, that's why the eggs we eat, we can't hard boil them. This titanium farm shell, I mean, they're impossible to peel. Don't even bother. And I think that has to do with, you know, maybe that clears out our mind with some gunk or something. I don't know. Don't eat this processed crap. Don't eat no pig meat. Goodness gracious. Craziness? Well, I mean, Wisconsin used to have a lot of deer, and then all of a sudden the deer started kissing the cows or something. Next thing you know, because the cows are eating the cows, next thing you know, there's prion, and next thing you know, that's what that...
Mad deer disease?
Yeah, man. No. I don't need no crazy free-floating prions in my brain. Who needs that? We don't need that. We got to eat good food. We got to take care of our body. We got to take care of our yards. We got to do these things. You should see the asparagus in my yard. Why would you spend $8 a pound? It's like a friggin' weight dumbbell. That's how big these things are coming out the ground. Couple years, let them do their thing. Next thing you know, giant, big black magic marker, green, purple.
You're killing me. You're killing me.
You know?
Toss them with a little olive oil, a little lemon juice, a little salt. Put them on a hot grill. Ha! Yeah.
Man, I put them in everything. I've been putting them on pizzas because, you know, I've been practicing all that. And that's, you know, that's another aspect of it, you know. I mean, Susan's exactly right. You know, people are going for quality over quantity. You know, and it is unfortunate, you know. I mean, I would personally, my preference, you don't really need tacos tonight. If you're going to eat the pink crab, just don't. You're not supposed to eat it that much anyway. So save it up for a good batch. Save it up for something that's decent, something that's not going to poison you. You know, I mean, you know, it's not like we're on, you know, going to Mars or something and we're running low on food stocks because we got hit with micrometeorites. You know, this is Earth, you know, this is home base. You know, we should be making the quality here. What are we doing? Why would we do anything else? Why do we need, you know, that crazy, that stuff's nasty, and every now and then, you know, there are farmers around here that use that ammonious, whatever the heck it is, you know, that nasty smelling stuff, you know, and,
mop water. You know, that's the shorthand for it. Maybe that's how we message on it. Ammonium hydroxide, mop water.
Yeah, I mean, and highly concentrated mop water. I mean, and I understand it's chemistry, and I love chemistry as much as the next person, but, you know, maybe even a little more, you know, but still, I mean...
Well, the next question, and I hope maybe we can just whisper this into the universe's ear and get an answer in fairly short order, because just the way, you know, the way corporate industrial food complex is, if we have pink slime... Doesn't it, just based on that label reading from the potted meat food product, spread meat product thing that Susan said, doesn't it stand to reason that if there's pink slime, there's pig slime? You know, that sausage that comes in the plastic casing that says things like Jimmy Dean's old country sausage? You know, Jimmy Dean was a revolting right-winger who would wring every possible penny of profit out of, you know, never mind all that big bad John horse crap. That man was just an absolute devil-hearted profiteer. And if anybody out there is using pig slime, it's Jimmy Dean.
Yep. Well, I mean, you know where them pigs are coming from anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know where they're living. They're living in a pig Auschwitz.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's terrible. It's maybe it's even worse. I mean, I don't even know. It's terrible. You know, I mean, not human-wise. I'm just talking about condition-wise. They got 40 of them in a tiny little 6x6 cage. They're eating off. They got to cut their ears and tails off or the chew. They're so, oh, my God. You know, and pigs are supposed to be smart, and that's how you're treating them, stressing them out. How do you think that's going to taste? No wonder you need all them spices. No wonder you need all that. You know, and then you need all them preservatives, and you need mop water to clean it. And you're eating that? You're putting, you don't eat it. You don't eat it.
No, Mr. Steyer doesn't eat it. Mr. Steyer just wants our kids to.
Yeah. You know, and,
yeah, that's one of the nice things. You don't have to worry about the twins going off to public school and eating downer cow tacos or the pink slime pizza. You don't have to do that.
No, I don't. I mean, and that's, you know. You know, I'm blessed or what have you. I've been touched by the noodly appendage in certain ways, and you know, I mean, there's just certain life decisions that you got to make, you know. We don't have to. We can be in Chicago right now. I mean, I could be back in New York right now. You know, but there has to come a certain level of personal responsibility.
No, but you've got this little paradise thing going on there in southwest Wisconsin, and you know it.
You were talking trout fishing. This is world class over here. I mean, we get Dick Cheney and these guys coming, Ted Turner, up here.
Yeah, Dick just wades out into the water and pulls them out in his fangs, right?
He just pulls his mask back. And they all float up to the top. I mean, it is a little paradise. And,
it wouldn't be funny if it weren't so true.
It's true. I mean, it's how he is, you know. He's been here forever, that guy.
Little strangling trout comes bobbing to the top of the water.
That's why it was orange.
Probably.
Ooh, and I'll tell you, that's buffalo grass vodka you were talking about. And buffalo grass vodka is delicious. That's a nice, that's something.
Okay, so I'm not crazy. That's the word for it, isn't it?
Yes. The thing is it had, I'm not sure if it had thujones or some other psychoactive, you know, in minute doses.
But yeah, not, but no thetans, right?
Yeah, there's plenty of those. All praise the Inu. Anyway, and we got a Mormon. I mean, we all know the Mormons, 18th century Scientologists. We all know that.
Yes.
I mean, come on now. I mean, you know Mitt. It's the same thing. It's the same exact thing. I mean, the only difference is they have little comm badges on the Scientologists' underwears. That's all. Little beep doop. It's a little more modern. The other
little mood ring, sensors that go up when the thetans start getting out of hand.
Yeah, exactly. Little e meter. Beep. You know, and then Mitt Romney's got the little flat.
Cool, Jesus.
Oh goodness! But you know, come on now. We ain't gonna deal no President Romney. Give me a break.
God help us, please, no.
Oh, my God. I mean, the universe, you'd be, again, it would be, I mean, I don't even know if I could be mad. It would be so ridiculous. I mean, you'd be mad
the way you're mad when you're reaching for the rice in the cabinet and you pull the door out into your own head, or you're mad when you stump your toe on the vacuum cleaner or something. That kind of mad.
Yeah. Yeah, it will hurt. It will be painful. Yeah, so stubborn, you know, cracking them knuckles. But working on a car in the cold. Yeah, it would be that kind of pain, Romney. My goodness. I'll tell you what, though. One thing I want to start getting going is, no matter what happens in 2012, it's going to be 2016 Damon. We need Matt Damon as president. I've never heard somebody talk so much sense in my whole life. In terms of somebody that's, you know, you would think they don't. That guy's brilliant. And did you see his, like, what was that, Insider? Man, that was some good stuff in that movie. Did you watch that one?
Yes, I did.
You know, he's a good actor. He always picks these really challenging, like, you know, these challenging stories with all this subtext, you know, where.
Well, the one he did about the, that was loosely based on the origins of the CIA.
Oh, yeah. I liked it. That was a good one. What was that? What was the name of that one?
Oh, I can't remember. I just remember it had Angelina Jolie in it, and that was my only problem with it.
Yeah, I saw it. My wife and I remember years back, we went to a movie, and she was in it, and I couldn't take it anymore. I mean, I don't know if they pumped her lips up with 20 pounds of collagen or what, but that's all I could see, and it was obscene. It was obscenity. I knew I wasn't on no theater, you know, with quarters on the thing. I wasn't. It was just ridiculous. And so, yeah, and that distracts me from anything else. I can't.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that's the perfect word. She's distracting.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just some actors and actresses that when they appear in a piece of film, I know that there's going to be a problem. That's why I didn't go see the movie that had her in. Oh, what was it? It was shot in, like, Venice or Florence or somewhere. I didn't go see that one. I don't go see movies with Adam Sandler in them.
Yeah.
Because Adam Sandler just annoys me. The only one where he even moderately didn't annoy me was The Wedding Singer. And that's because his annoyability factor was balanced by Drew Barrymore's, you know, she just turned in a good piece of work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Adam, you know, the water boy. Little Nicky. Yeah, Ferg likes to do his Little Nicky voice, and I've gotten to the point where I look at him and say, son, really? No, you're not allowed to make that. You know, yes, you've got daddy's talent for doing funny little voices. You don't do that little voice around daddy. Yeah, The Good Shepherd. That was the
good
movie.
Good Shepherd, yes. Yeah. That was a good one. Well, then, so was the one with, where he, I mean, and that was accurate. The subtext of that movie was as accurate as I've ever seen represented in Hollywood next to, I mean, since War Incorporated. What was the one where he played the captain of the guard? They were looking for the weapons of mass destruction, and
yeah.
And then they were looking for the generals and the playing cards, you know. I'm sorry, if you look at the timeline, that's pretty much what was happening, you know, and you see kind of what was the deal. Yeah, I mean, he's showing you some dirty right there. That's some dirt, you know, and it's a movie, and it's dramatized, true, but that's kind of based kind of pretty accurately, and you don't think Archer Daniel Midland was price fixing with lysine and everything else like that? You bet your ass they were.
Sure they were.
Money. Of course it is. All right, yeah, sure. The guy stole, he did this, he did that. You know, he's just crazy making lies and everything else. He was still right about that. They still had those tapes. I mean, I remember there was an investigation back then. Wasn't there? I remember hearing about it. You know, ADM. What's that ADM? Oh, Archer Daniel Midland. You know, it's just one of those things. You know, of course we know what they're doing, don't we, Archer Daniel Midland? That's what we're talking about, right? Pink meat. And so, you know, what are the big names in the agricultural sector? Who comes up with ideas like this? Yeah, we know who comes up with ideas like this. You know, they rule. They rule .net. Don't forget.
Oh yeah.
Go look. They're all there. You know. Oh boy. But yeah, there's a lot of good films out, and I don't go to theaters no more. I'm not paying it. I don't care. And yeah, that's the other thing. What's all the remakes? What is this? I mean, we've seen Titanic. I seen it. I've seen it.
Really? What was the point in releasing Star Wars in 3D?
Oh well, he's off my list forever.
Oh, I didn't realize. I didn't get the memo.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. His name shall not be mentioned. That guy's a rapist. Of himself, of everyone. Oh, my childhood. Oh, forget him. No, he destroyed everything. I can't take it. He's off.
You know what I do find fascinating, and I probably will get suckered into a movie theater. Just because I don't have time to read the book, and I'm ashamed of myself for saying that. But The Hunger Games.
Okay.
I'm fascinated with it because, you know, the Katniss, the heroine.
Okay.
Comes from District 12.
Okay.
District 12 is Appalachia.
Hmm.
You remember when you saw Avatar, and I remember when I saw Avatar, and they're getting off the ship there on the planet. And there are these great big humongous earth-moving machines.
Mm-hmm.
And my entire family was sitting there in the theater together, and we all just squeezed we squeezed each other's hands at the same time, and we all went, Jesus, it's a mountaintop removal operation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these little metaphors are finding their way into the public consciousness, because Katniss comes from District 12, which is a starving former coal region in Appalachia. And it's the poorest of the poor. So apparently, however many hundreds of years out, Appalachia doesn't get any better. Not that you would expect it to, Brother Albert, in light of the fact that there are billions upon billions of toxic waste seas that are just dotting the moonscape. But, you know, it's a fast, for those of us who know, you know, who have some cultural context, and that means the Horn family. It's a fascinating retell of the Theseus myth,
okay,
where the little Greek boys and girls have to go as tribute to the Minoan kingdom and do the bull dancing, and none of the children ever come home. Well, that's what the Hunger Games are. But they're repackaged inside this post-apocalyptic dystopian future, and the central character is a hillbilly. And as one report about it noted that I read, News Ninja Gene sent it along, you don't necessarily know it from the film because she speaks good Hollywoodese.
Mm-hmm.
But when the author read the book on in the audiobook version, the heroine's accent is hillbilly. And so what we're doing is we're telling just as our favorite film of all time, Idiocracy, is a retelling of our present in a future gone horribly awry. Well, the same thing's happening in The Hunger Games. Because the fact of the matter is, children, all the way down to in the womb, are being sacrificed every day against their will by coal companies for coal company profits in exchange, literally, for food. What is coal? What the hell else is coal keeps the lights on, Brother Albert?
You know I know.
We're going to poison you, blow up your towns, give you cancer and heart disease, and in return we're going to let you have some food and new bulbs for your wife's tanning bed and a new ATV. Here's your poison. Drink up. Breathe up. Bathe up. Eat up.
20 pounds of ground beef for $5.99? Oh, we're living on the high, aren't we, Bob?
No, oh, these are the good times, Brother Albert.
You should let the onion soothe your soul a little bit. You're really going to get a kick out of that one.
Yeah, I can't wait.
They're with us. Times are, we're getting to get them, Bob. We got them. We're getting them every day, a little more and more. Just big erosions to their walls. It's amazing. So we're going to have a, I hope you have a good weekend, and I'll see you on Monday, right?
Yeah, I'm going to try real hard, you know, with this whole Lord of the Flies thing that's going on now that Agnes has gone for Easter weekend to visit the grandbabies.
Well, get some, come on, you could bake a chicken. Get some butter. That's
probably no, I'm kidding. There won't be starvation here. No. I know what I'm doing. The weather stays as pretty. if the weather's as pretty tomorrow as it was today, I'm going. See, I like to buy cuts of meat that still vaguely resemble the animal it came from. I will go and get a pork shoulder. I will rub that bad boy down. I will place him in my smoker, and for about 12 hours, I'm going to subject him to a wet hickory sodden fire, indirectly. And then I'm going to take him off, and I'm going to serve it on toasted buns with hellaciously spicy yellow hot slaw, the recipe from a barbecue joint that is no more in my hometown. I may be the last man making it, for all I know. And it's going to be some kind of good.
I need it. I'm going to need that recipe. I'll help you keep the tradition.
Oh, you know what? A place like Wisconsin, Wisconsinites would go crazy over this slaw. On a brat, Albert, on a brat, this is not to be believed. Just toasty bun, brat, slaw, nothing else.
Well, I'm going to have to get some.
I'll share.
When you get up here, oh, I'm going to share. And I was thinking about getting a pork butt today. I was thinking about a shoulder roast. I'm like, I got to start the spring.
See, that's
off
the thing.
Right.
You want it that still looks, it looks like a shoulder, not that's been, you want that layer of skin on there so that the fat melts, not partially melted pork product. No. When the fat melts, I want to know the fat has melted because I have created a low, slow hickory fire about 3 feet away from it.
Leave that bone in there or take it out. I have to have them take it out to fit in my smoker, but, I know what it is. It's tied.
Mm-hmm.
And that's processed meat.
Yeah, because I did the processing.
That's right. don't be afraid. You can go to work, come back. As long as you got a decent barbecue, you can.
Oh, no. I'll fire up the mower, create a nice little mowed out spot, move the smoker into position, get the folding chair out. It's got the little built-in can holder there. Just sit in the sun and every now and then throw a wet chunk of hickory into the firebox and feel real good about life.
Amen, brother. That sounds like a great weekend. I'm gonna try to share that with you. virtually.
All right, I will send photos upon completion.
I don't know if I could get it. I'll get one tomorrow. I'm not gonna be able to cook it tomorrow though. Maybe I'll start it.
Start it. Just get it, rub it, put it in the fridge, bring it out before you're gonna smoke it. Let it come to room temperature. Put it on the smoker. Walk away. Yes.
Well, no excuses not to do that. You can turn, and that's the thing. That's the other thing, people. You can get a nice pig, you know, and you know where I live, you know, so we have nice pigs that live decent lives, and, you know, this and that. We have a couple of the other ones, but, you know, you get a nice, what does that shoulder roast cost you? What does that cost you, $10, $11?
$10.
You can feed, $10, you can feed, and you can feed on it for
six people.
For a couple of days, maybe?
Yeah, making barbecues like you can only get by the roadside.
For lunch and dinner?
Yeah.
And snacks
in between.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know what? I'm going to sprinkle that on some pizza.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. One of my favorite things to do, Albert, is to make a chili verde. You know, tomatillos, roast the Anaheim peppers, get the skins off, puree the roasted tomatillos and the roasted peppers together, add a little garlic, a little cumin, that kind of stuff. And make that sauce.
Base.
Yeah, and then put the hickory smoked pork shoulder chopped up nicely into that mix and serve it over a nice rice.
Toss that on a pizza, caramelized onions and
cheese. Now we're doing food porn.
Yeah. little habanero pepper jack.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
All day long I'm going to be doing that.
You are going to be one popular neighbor this weekend.
I'm gonna try, you know. I mean, why not? I hope it stays beautiful for everybody. You know, we don't need no more tornadoes. We don't need, maybe a little rain. I could deal with a little rain.
Yeah, we got that yesterday. Today was blue sky. The sky was the color of bright space.
Oh yeah, no, it's still here. It's still here where I'm at, Brother Bob. It's still beautiful out there. The girls are just out there and soaking it in, and you know, it's not as warm as it could be, but I'm not crying.
No, it hasn't been blistering. No, this feels like April.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. You know.
Well, Albert, have a wonderful weekend.
You too, Brother Bob. You be good. Give my love to everybody. Enjoy your day tomorrow.
I am so gonna try. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, be good.
Bye. Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody? Welcome to the program. Okay. This in from Isaac. You and Albert should charge us for this food porn on the airwaves. Just think of this as inspiration, Isaac. All is possible. Yeah, see, good. I'm glad. See, Susan started this, tormenting me with that yummy sausage. Well, it goes places. Subject line, hot slaw and pork shoulder. You're killing me here, says Dr. John. Wife's from Bama. So we appreciate both kinds of barbecue. I make the hot slaw on your recommendation, so you ain't alone, brother. it's so simple and so good. Maybe we'll go through that process one of these evenings. Ron writing in from Raleigh. My take on The Hunger Games, having not seen it, but when I hear the synopsis, The Hunger Games seems like a mashup of The Running Man and A Handmaid's Tale. Yeah, I can see that, but the first thing that I thought of, you know, since it involves young people going to compete in something by compulsion, and nobody comes home, that's the retelling of the Theseus myth. If you want the very best fictionalized retelling of the Theseus myth, let me recommend, and you know, this guy, I think she wrote these in the 1940s, but they are magic to this day. Mary Renault. Mary Renault, R-E-N-A-U-L-T. Just brilliant retelling of the Theseus tale. You know, he's the son of a king. He goes, he winds up being selected in the lottery to go to Crete, and therein he meets and slays the Minotaur. Fascinating. And, you know, not a big, dense read either. You'll just blow right through it if you've never read it before, and you will enjoy the heck out of it. Yeah, Ray, yeah, first annual Food Porn Fridays. This isn't the first annual by any stretch of the imagination. This just happens periodically. And now, look at the little bit of missionary work. Dick Howell, and that was his name, had a little barbecue stand, a little curb service barbecue stand, down toward the riverside, the south side of Florence, Alabama. And, it was said that you could also order up, this is back during, when it was a dry county, it was said you could also, if you were known to them, you could order up a pint of liquor or, yeah, all sorts of stuff there. But they specialized in barbecue and hot dogs. They put the slaw on hot dogs. And, oh, it was not to be believed. It was so good. And that shut down. And then a few years later, much nearer to where the house where I grew up, you know, bicycling distance for a boy, this barbecue stand came in. And the technical term for it was pool hall slaw. It's not a mayonnaise-based slaw. It's mustard-based. But it's got a fire to it that will, I mean, set your mouth dancing. And see, I love this idea that we've got pool hall, Dick Howell's pool hall slaw going in upstate New York. We've got, and we're about to have it going in Wisconsin. I got Psychoticus Rex, our buddy Chris, in the chat room saying, hot slaw, oh my God, there's a serious idea. So it'll be out there in British Columbia. All because of a little bitty internet radio show that you make go. Good idea, Bill of Rights, man. We should start the Horn Food Porn Cookbook for a fundraiser. I love that. And by the way, speaking of fundraisers, sorry, it's Friday. If you go to the contribute page, you will see, I love this new widget that John put up. It's excellent. You don't even have to go to the contribute page. It's right there on the main page, as is the button, the PayPal button. You will see that we are at 22% for the month. That thanks to you, we have raised to $570 this evening, which means that we need just 55 more. And you can see it happen right there on that little widget, just 55 more, and we have done our fundraising for the month of April. And we've got an hour to do that in. Put up the recipe, Chris, where? Why don't I tell you the recipe real quick? Everybody get a pencil. It's slaw, so there will be cabbage involved. What you want is a head of cabbage and a nice handful. And this isn't like one of those long shreddy slaws. This is a really finely chopped slaw. Just do it in the food processor. You want a good sized onion, a head of cabbage, and a good three or four normal sized carrots, or a good handful of those little shaved up things that they pass off as baby carrots, and just food process it all down to a nice fine, not a pulp, but you know, coarse. Put it in a bowl, add in enough plain old fashioned yellow mustard to get it nice and yellowy. Probably about a quarter of a cup of white, not cider, not red wine, not balsamic, just plain old white vinegar. About a quarter to a third a cup of that, toss on of salt, a wee little bit of sugar, and then hammer the daylights out of it with cayenne pepper. And stir it all up, and cover it with plastic wrap and let it sit out. This has no mayonnaise in it, so you don't have to worry about anything going south. It's all acidy, so no bad things are going to happen in there. Let it sit and just work together. And the longer it sits, the better it'll be. And then pack it in a quart mason jar or a couple of them and stick them in the fridge. It's good forever. I mean, it stays good for a long, long time. And then you put it on a barbecued pork sandwich, or better yet, you put it on a hot dog and press the hot dog either in a waffle iron or a George Foreman grill so that the outside of the bun gets nice and toasty, and man, you are home. It's just, yeah, see, you're already messing with the recipe. Make it once and then start tinkering. But yeah, some radishes might be, oh yeah, or maybe, yeah, maybe some regular red radishes for color, or maybe some daikon. Oh, yeah. I can think where maybe a little bit of wasabi root or horseradish root would light it up real nicely, too. Chicken, it's awesome on chicken. Okay, Susan, I can do that. Write out the recipe and I'll post it on the website. Call it Friday Food Porn. Just as the spirit moves us. And maybe after that we'll get around to I've never seen it anywhere else, tartar sauce recipe. Also good on pork and chicken. Kathy, writing from Arizona, says, I always use kielbasa instead of hot dogs. Tastes great. Yeah. Oh, please. So there you go. Everybody makes pool hall slaw this weekend and reports back. Send your photos. We'll put up your individual photos and see what folks think. Yeah, see, Chris, that's what this is. Maybe dedicate a section of the Horn website under the title bar recipes and maybe book recommendations or reading list. That's all. That's what the whole show is. Because the show, and especially Friday on the Front Porch, is just neighbors talking about whatever matters to neighbors. Nice, huh? There's just not a lot of radio out there like this. Once upon a time there was, but it proved hard to sell buy gold schemes and the Swedish mattresses that have bowling balls land on them having been dropped by a vacuum cleaner while the person operating it was listening to a Bose Wave radio as the hair grew back or didn't from the patent hair regrowth formula that they were hustled on said radio. What is this? What is this? New York Times reporter admonished for voicing opposition to gender discrimination? Yeah, it's that time of year, isn't it? An event like no other. Yeah, the Masters is an event like no other because they don't want none of them women folks around their golfing course. Only this year they've got a real problem. The CEO of IBM, who is one of the principal sponsors, is a female. And traditionally, the corporate sponsors, the top dog thereof, are presented with the fabled Augusta National Golf Club green jacket. But they're not going to give a green jacket to the CEO of IBM. Wow, do I feel creepy defending a corporate CEO? Yes, I do. But this is the story. The CEO of IBM doesn't get one of those green jackets because she has a vagina. have no idea what that has to do with the game of golf, and I've played a lot of golf. I remember that one old horse's ass golf commentator said, well, women naturally aren't very good golfers because their breasts get in the way of the swing. Bring me another gin and tonic, boy. Jesus Christ. So there's been a bit of a stink about this. Virginia Romney is the woman in question, R-O-M-E-T-T-Y, and it's maybe Rometty, is the CEO of IBM, and she doesn't get a green jacket. Why, she doesn't even get a little green cocktail frock. No, not at all. The prior four CEOs of IBM all were given honorary membership at Augusta National, which is what the green jacket signifies. And so far, no green jacket for you. You know how bad... Here, this is the barometer of how bad it is at Augusta National. When grumpy old John McCain tweets, don't you think it's time Augusta National joined the 21st century or the 20th and allowed women members? When John McCain tweets that, you know you've got a problem. When Nikki Haley, who recently opined that women don't care that much about contraception, says, of course women should be admitted to Augusta National. Doesn't that just tell you a little something about the 1%? Nikki Haley doesn't think women care much about contraception, but by God, she wants her elitist sister, her 1% sister, to get that green jacket. Augusta National has a problem now. And it's even... Then there's Karen Krause, who, even though she's a woman, is a golfing writer for the New York Times, the paper of record for the 1%. She gave an interview to golf.com and said that she'd like to use her influence to bring about a change at Augusta National. She said, if it were left to me, which it seldom is in the power structure of writer versus editor, I'd probably not come cover this event again until there's a woman member. More and more, the lack of a woman member is just a blue elephant in the room. You know, blue, like Viagra. I love the Masters for the reasons the players do. The course is beautiful, the history is abundant, but I find it harder and harder, Ms. Krause said, to get past one thing that's missing. PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham is not making a stand. High-ranking players with daughters are not willing to talk about it. Somebody has to make a stand. Why not me in my own little way? Like I said, the New York Times is the paper of record for the 1%, and the 1% are primarily male. And what Ms. Krause said went over like the proverbial turd in the proverbial punch bowl. Contacted by the Associated Press, New York Times sports editor Joe Sexton said the comments were completely inappropriate and she has been spoken to. Little woman! Billy Payne is the chairman of Augusta National. He says Augusta will decide for itself whom to allow in its ranks. You might recall that when Tiger Woods first won the Masters, another former winner queried whether or not the Masters dinner that year would be watermelon and fried chicken. We're not talking about some noble institution. Ultimately, then, ultimately, it becomes a question for golfers, and particularly professional golfers, and more particularly that little bitty fraternity of golfers who have won the Masters. And it's time for them to say something. I don't care about their hallowed traditions. Slavery was a hallowed tradition. It is not possible in the 21st century in the United States of America for bigotry and discrimination to be either hallowed or a tradition. But there's a lot of millions on the line, I guess, and that's probably a lot of millions that a lot of golfers are not willing to risk by saying, you know, listen, we're not coming. When Augusta National becomes a place of equality and fairness, we will, but not now. Get your tired old bigots out there on the course and let them play. And in particular, people who have been themselves the victim of discrimination have more than enough reason to stay away. But they won't either. But at least some kudos, at least kudos to Ms. Krause for speaking up, even though she was told to sit down and shut up, little woman. You know who needs to be out of a job? The editor of the New York Times sports page. For those comments, precisely, she has been spoken to. The hell kind of language is that in the 21st century in the United States of America? Honest to Pete. Of course, there's always, even if they're not valid, there are always two sides to a story, right? That's why CNN hired a two-legged turd like Eric Erickson. By all means, let's hear the misogynist take on this, shall we?
Let's get back into the Masters. Last night, we didn't have a whole lot of hooting and hollering over the Masters and the women there, but now the Associated Press brings us this fine reporting.
I'm Dan Raviv. On the issue of letting women become members of Augusta National, home of the Masters tournament, White House spokesman Jake Carney had a reply.
The president's answer to this question is yes. We're kind of long past the time when women should be excluded from anything.
And this is rare. Republican candidate Mitt Romney agrees.
If I could run Augusta, which isn't likely to happen, but I'd have women in Augusta.
Sure.
A big sponsor of the club in Georgia is IBM, which has a new female CEO. The last four chief executives were invited into the club. She was not. Dan Raviv, CBS News.
Who cares? Who cares that she wasn't invited into the club? She's a woman. Women aren't allowed. I'm sorry, people. And so the president has weighed into this. Jay Carney, well, yes, I've asked him. See, the president is trying to make everything political. President both ways wants to have it both ways on this. He wants to go play at the Masters. Oh, you're darn right. The president wants to go play at the Masters, but he thinks women should be allowed. They should be members. Why must women be members of Augusta National? Why? Because it's the last bastion of sexism. I thought the Republican Party was the last bastion of sexism and misogyny in America. Oh, wait. They nominated Sarah Palin to be vice presidential nominee, and the left referred to her as the C word, the T word, the B word, and every other word you can imagine. Oh, yes, intellectual honesty there. And, of course, Mitt Romney, well, yeah, I think women should be allowed to go. Well, at least he's smart enough to know that we don't want to wade into the war on women with Augusta. It is striking to me just how political the president wants to make everything. The war on women coming home to the masters. Who freaking cares? I am glad. I am not a member, by the way, of
really?
The master of Augusta National. I'm not a very good golfer. I would love to be a member of Augusta National one day after I get my private jet. Pig Farmer, are you listening? But at the same time, I don't really care. And I don't care that the Masters is a male-dominated event. I don't care that women aren't members of the Masters. Frankly, I kind of like the idea that women aren't members of the Masters. Good Lord, I don't want to go hang out at some women's event. Can't men go anywhere and just be men? There are plenty of places women can go and be women. It would be sexist if we denied them that right, Mr. Erickson. But men aren't allowed to do it at the Masters. Men are not allowed to go to an all-male golf club. Oh, wait, they are, and that's the problem. This is such a non-issue, and it comes up all the time. And you know what, Mr. President? Why don't you just leave partisanship out of golf? Why don't you leave the politics out of golf? There is no reason to wade into that. Jay Carney, if he were a little bit brighter, could have just said, I have no idea why. Oh, that's right. Because they're convinced. I'm going to spend time later. I don't want to do it right now. I don't want to get indigestion right now on this stupid war on women.
And by hearing the jingle, you know that that is more of the excellent work of our friends at Media Matters for America. Professional broadcasting from Eric Erickson. Good Lord, I don't want to be hanging out at some women's event. Buddy, I don't think yours is big enough for you to worry about hanging out. I'm looking at your face, and I'm guessing you haven't even seen it for a few years. I kind of like the idea that women aren't members of the Masters. I mean, the next thing you know, we'll have to be discussing tampon dispensers at the Masters board meeting instead of talking, making jokes about having fried chicken and watermelon at the winner's dinner. Oh, what's happening? Oh, I don't understand. Oh, the world's coming. And he spins this as a matter of Barack Obama politicizing the Masters? He didn't. How is it that Mitt Romney wasn't politicizing the Masters by saying women should be admitted? There's no mention of John McCain saying women should be admitted. There's no mention by this right-wing horse's ass that Nikki Haley said women should be admitted. What a sad, tired old legacy the Masters has created for itself. I stopped watching a couple of years ago. It used to be every spring I sat down and made a point of watching the Masters. Because it was, you know, beautiful and the Amen Corner and the Eisenhower Tree And then I quit. And I stopped watching it specifically because, not that anybody was paying attention, but specifically because even by spending time with my TV tuned to it, I was participating in a form of oppression. I was giving sanction to it morally, consciously, in my own being. Could you hear the white male privilege just radiating off of Eric Erickson, who doesn't understand why those women's would want to even be there? Who cares she wasn't invited into the club? She's a woman. Women aren't allowed. How many other institutions in the United States would Eric Erickson like to see where women aren't allowed? As recently as when I was a teenager and got to take that one trip that I had in my life to Europe, there was a house in Pompeii, we toured Pompeii for a few hours, that women folk were not allowed to see. Do you know why? Because it had a painting, as the house of the brothers Wetii, actually, and they were, I guess, playboys of the first order there of first century CE Rome. And when you entered their, when you came to their house, there was a painting on the wall there of Apollo with like a 4-foot erection sticking out from under his toga. And the Italian authorities, probably influenced by the church, naturally, would not allow women near it. For fear of what? That they would faint, and we'd have to get out the smelling salts and the fainting sofas, and yeah. Oh, look at the size of that, Martha! Golly, Moses! Oh no, Moses with the erection, he's down the street. And even as Kate pointed it out, my genteel upbringing that prevented me from repeatedly saying the word vagina on air. See, I can do it. No problem at all. All comes from that terrified male privilege place that does so much harm, so much damage in this culture and in so many others. Male privilege is the one thing that knows no skin tone, knows no the so-called racial boundary. There are a few places on the planet, though not many remain, where culturally women have enjoyed equal status. I think about the Shawnee people, where there was a peace chief and a war chief. The war chief was always male, and the peace chief was always female, and the war chief couldn't go to war without the permission of the women folk. And the Shawnee people were a very successful people for a very, very long time. White folks that were carried away or ran away to Native American communities that were by and large much more egalitarian would sometimes be ransomed or rescued back to their proper place and culture, and as soon as they could, most of them ran back, you know, ran back to the people who bathed, ran back to the people who didn't lop other people's heads off for believing the wrong myth about the wrong god. Ran back to people who were far more successful at living in this new world than their fellow white folks were. It is 2012, and even the 1% CEO of IBM, by virtue of her genetic makeup, something for which she is neither privileged nor at fault, is denied admission in an institution in the United States of America. Does that just blow your mind? Because it does mine.
Well, you know, if we let the women in at Augusta, the next thing you know, we're going to be a sharing bathrooms.
Because I've heard that. I've heard that argument before. Fear. Scared plumb out of our little old tiny minds. Dr. John writing in, Mitt, Augusta, that's a perfect job for him. Go, Mitt, go! Did you see Lee Westwood's comment, John asks? No, I didn't. What gender issue? I'm a man. I'm rooting against him just for his obvious male privilege. Oblivious male privilege. Yeah. Ray, that's a low blow. You're turning into Oprah, Bob. That's cold. That's cold. Jack says he's never heard of yellow mustard being put on slaw. Yeah, I think this is a kind of a North Alabama thing. I don't know where I'd love to know what the origins of the recipe are. Same thing if you go about 40 miles to the east to a little town called Decatur, Alabama, named after Stephen Decatur. You will find something called white barbecue sauce, mainly used on chicken, made with buttermilk, mayonnaise, lots of spices and flavorings. And man, does it make chicken on the grill taste some kind of good. Brush it on wings, chicken legs, thighs, whatever. And it disappears. It doesn't stay white. It just disappears over the course, and you just baste as you grill. And oh, my word, it's good. Yeah, white barbecue. Probably look it up and find it. The originator of it is Big Bob Gibson's Barbecue in Decatur, Alabama. Not the baseball pitcher. Different Bob Gibson. But some kind of good. Meanwhile, speaking of discrimination and this being Good Friday and all, you know, I always kind of wondered why the day that Jesus theoretically was murdered was referred to as Good Friday. It seems kind of, I mean, if you were looking at it from Jesus' perspective, it would be really bad Friday or very, very painful, tormented Friday or really sad Friday. But no, it's Good Friday. It is the Christianized version of the story of the resurrection of the God hero, whether it be the Osiris-Ra-Isis myth or the Mithras myth. You know, you really couldn't be a self-respecting up-and-coming religion in the Near East 2,000 years ago unless you had a good virgin birth and resurrection story. I mean, you weren't even going to get in the running. That's why St. Paul had to invent a bunch of it. You know, the oldest gospel that we have to hand is the gospel of St. Mark. And it is, well, if you would bother to read the works of Dr. Bart Ehrman, who can explain how the gospels got to be the way they are, you'll find that the oldest gospel is the gospel of Mark. It is not older than the letters of St. Paul, but it is the oldest of the gospels. It is one of the so-called synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and Thomas, all of which come from a common source. And it's the earliest telling of the crucifixion story. And it is noteworthy for what also in the Gospel of Mark is the story of the woman caught in adultery. You know, the whole let that person who is without sin cast the first stone, and all of a sudden a rock comes flying up from the back of the crowd and hits Jesus over the eye and whacks him a good one. Goose egg starts coming up, and he surveys the back of the crowd, and he says, "Honestly, Mom, sometimes you really piss me off." No. The woman caught in adultery, and let that person who is without sin cast the first stone. That's not in the original version. That gets added about 200 years later by a scribe with a good idea. And the same thing happens to the end of the Gospel of Mark. And when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome had bought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. And very early in the morning of the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre? And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And he saith, be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your own way. Tell his disciples and Peter that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him as he said unto you. And they went out quickly and fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed. Neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. And there's verse 9 through 20 that appears after that, and it wasn't in the original version. It doesn't get added like the woman caught in adultery for about another 200 years. It's made up stuff. It was added in because it made the story better. No explanation. No zombie Jesus appearing and, you know, dropping M&Ms through his hands or anything. Just, he's not here. No explanation. He's not here. Corey writing in from Louisville. He says, I must be one of those rare liberal-thinking people who doesn't really care that women aren't allowed into Augusta. It's a private club. They can do what they want because it's a private club. That being said, I also have no problem with Augusta National getting blasted by anyone and everyone for not allowing women into their private country club. My only thought on this entire debacle is simply this. Why would any woman want to join a club that's been openly hostile to women from the club's founding to the second decade of the 21st century? Being associated with that club with membership doesn't look good in my eyes, male or female. Despite what anyone says, golf is a sport of elitist white males, and despite the marketing of Tiger Woods, I don't see much changing this. Let the white second and third and tenth generation blue bloods have their sport. I think the best and appropriate thing that we all need to do is to render this club and this event into meaninglessness. Don't give it coverage or any press. Giving the Masters and Augusta all of this coverage gives all those associated more resolve to stand their ground. Kill the major press and let the membership die off. And I understand a lot of that. But by the same token, what would make a woman want to become a cadet at West Point or a midshipman at Annapolis or a cadet at the Citadel? Those gender lines had to be broken as well. There's something fundamentally unfair about saying no fill in the blanks allowed. But especially noxious coming out of this is the response of the Westwoods, as Dr. John noted, and the editor at the New York Times saying, she has been spoken to. Because Lord knows we can't be calling out all that white privilege. And maybe that's my reasoning, Corey. Is that white privilege needs to be fought wherever it rears its ugly, ugly head. Because it needs to be eliminated. Nobody gets, at least in any notion of so-called equality and freedom, nobody gets to be special just because of some accident of their birth, be it skin color or be it gender or be it national origin. The universe doesn't like women better than men or men better than women. It is entirely a construct of white folks and male folks that they're special and God likes them more. And that's why it has to go. Because it is fundamentally unfree and undemocratic. just my thinking. It's not because it's not like a voluntary association of people. I can't just go and join Augusta, even as a privileged white male. I can't just go and join. Their anti-female bias is only the tip of their iceberg. They had a long-standing anti-color bias. They've got economic bias. And you know what? If they want to exist by economic bias, that's fine. But golf in particular has a long and nasty history of bias. I remember when the PGA had its championship at Shoal Creek Country Club in Birmingham, Alabama, which had to hustle to go out and find themselves a token black member. It's just nasty. Just nasty. And maybe, you know, one thing to put on the top of the list for the 21st century is getting shed. Getting shed of some of that white privilege. Crazy? I hope not. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? It happened again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Jim, what's up?
You.
Trying.
You and Apollo.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I can enter that competition. I don't think Eric Erickson could either, for that matter.
That too, and I thought to myself, my God, what do you do with something like put a flag on it or throw it over your shoulder and burp it?
No fair. I was in the middle of getting a drink of water.
I don't know, but anyway. And as far as the Citadel is concerned, they resisted it, but they did finally admit women. Now, the first one who went there was, like, overweight and really out of shape, and she didn't make it, but I think the second one did.
Yeah.
And so, I've got no problem with that. Hell, in my senior year, they admitted the first black boy named Charlie Foster in G Company.
And that was what year?
67.
And the Citadel had been around for how long?
Since 1841. But anyway, that's the Citadel, and, you know...
But it was the same at West Point. It was the same at Colorado Springs. It was the same at Annapolis.
But, you know, I remember things that happened to that kid. I will never forget this. I mean, I think on one occasion, he was in 2nd Battalion over in Band Company, and I had to go to some guy's room to get an assignment because I'd been in the infirmary. And I looked up in the second gallery, and there was like a white sheet draped over a cross that was on fire in front of his room.
Jesus.
And so it was kind of rough, old Charlie, but he made it.
And went on and served honorably, I imagine.
Yeah, I had a lot of respect for him. I really did. And I'll tell you one thing, I certainly never gave anybody I never gave him any trouble. And
I'm not going to sit here and say that his struggle is the same as that of the CEO of IBM not getting a green jacket.
Well, no, there's no comparison. I mean, that's ridiculous. But I can remember, let me put it this way, as far as the plebe system there at the Citadel is concerned, it was real rough. I mean, the service academies, Beast Barracks, only lasts from early summer until August or September. But at the Citadel, it started from the day you went in there and to the day you were recognized in June of the following year.
As having survived your plebe year.
Yeah, I can tell you stuff that would curl your hair about that place.
I don't doubt it.
I mean, you only could walk on certain parts of the gallery. You had to have your chin racked in and going at 180 steps a minute. And then they would have sweat parties in the shower when you're all your uniform between your raincoat and pushing a rifle at extended port at 120 degrees in there. You wouldn't believe the hazing that went on there.
And what... Jim, what purpose did it serve? Did it make anybody a better soldier?
No, it did not. It simply made me promise to myself that when I returned as a third classman and as a second classman, as a fourth classman, when I finally graduated, that I would never inflict that kind of humiliation or punishment on any young person. And I never did. And was criticized for not having done so.
Oh, I don't doubt it. You know, the person who doesn't go along with a hazing scheme is dangerous, is a threat.
Well, basically, they knew how I felt, and I was left alone. But, you know, I just told them, I said, look, I've got two things to accomplish here. First is to get an education. Second, my commission. And I don't need to get any kind of crap with the Commandant's office about excessive brutality and force, which is all I did.
And people, I mean, people died from that stuff. I mean, there have been more than one death incident, whether it be the service academies or even something as seemingly innocuous as fraternity hazing on regular college campuses. It's dangerous.
Well, of course it is, and it's not only dangerous, but it's damaging to the psyche and it's damaging to the body as well. It really is.
Well, I mean, what would happen in a combat situation if somebody who had hazed you mercilessly during your college days suddenly found himself badly in need of the aid and assistance of a fellow soldier that had been the victim? That can't be good for anything resembling esprit de corps.
Well, let me put it this way. You ever heard of being fragged?
Yes. That's what I'm getting at.
I know. We won't go there, but that's exactly what you're talking about. But I can remember we had our company party in which we were recognized at the beach, and there was one guy who had ridden my ass mercilessly the whole year, and he went to shake my hand. And I had to do stuff, and this guy was like, go up to his room at 4 o'clock in the morning for extended push-ups and all this kind of stuff. And his roommate jumped out of bed and jumped right on my back and nearly killed me. And when that guy walked to shake my hand, I spit in his face.
I get the notion he earned it.
And I said, let's have a go at it in the surf. And I almost killed that boy. It took two of them to drag me off him. I was going to drown that son of a bitch. I was so filled with ire and anger with him. I mean, he was just a sick son of a bitch.
Indeed.
I mean, he would, for example, put a Roy machine in front of a toilet and then use it, and you'd have to roll up over the toilet and stuff like that, and I'm not going to go any further, but I hope that that is basically been reformed where people are allowed to, you know, pursue a college education and a commission without having been humiliated or damaged or...
Well, you take somebody who is, in many cases, on their first foray out alone into the real world without the protective barrier of parents.
Well, there's no...
And you brutalize them?
There was no protective barrier in those barracks after dinner, when it was dark, and, you know, there was only had one tactical officer, and, you know, and the upperclassmen were allowed to do what the hell they wanted to. And, but we had our own ways of getting back at people. Let me tell you. You bet, rest assured. I know I should even admit this, but I will tell you a story if you don't mind listening.
No, not at all.
Well, this same guy who gave me so much trouble, oh, Lord, I said, well, I had to go to the infirmary to get a flu shot. And I asked the nurse if I could have a needle. She said, what do you want it for? And that's when they had those little cartridges with the script pens where you could fill them back up.
Yeah.
Well, when I went to chemistry, I got acid in that needle, and I had to go to his door to put a delinquency slip in his door slip, and he couldn't go in the room, but I could see his full dress coat hanging on his press or locker, and I took that needle, and I just shot acid all over that thing, and it turned from gray to yellow. And I could hear him bellow all the way. Oh, God, he was screaming. He was running across the quadrangle going to the laundry to try to get it taken out. And guess what he brought back with him?
What's that?
No sleeve.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that was may sound horrible to some people, but, I mean, when you're in a position where you're powerless and somebody is just breaking your life to live in hell,
No, that's a documented fact of all oppressive societies. The oppressed always fight back, but they do so in the means that are best available to them.
Or walk by his car and have your key in his hand, key his car.
Zip.
I mean, you know, that happened, and I remember there was one guy that they actually put some type of poison in his salt shaker in the mess hall. And I just thought to myself, well, you know, this is totally counterproductive. It's counterproductive as far as discipline, as far as pride, as far as esprit de corps, and as far as unit cohesion. You don't treat people like that because, you know, one day that guy's going to be guarding your back.
Yeah, one of these days your life is going to depend upon that person.
Well, that's what you have to realize about a situation like that. You put your you have to put your life in there in his hands, and he puts your life in his hands. That's the way it goes.
And what is astonishing is that it was allowed to go on as long as it did, and I guess to some extent it still happens, doesn't it? I mean, plebe year is still no walk in the park.
Not there. I mean, like I say, it was just absolutely, it was brutal. It was extremely brutal.
By the way, you got a note in from Kate out on the Front Range, Jim. She says, please thank Jim for suggesting the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius. I'm wading through the material. She said, I'm pleased that you've been paying attention to me all these years. It's just what I need when all is crumbling around me. Thank you again.
Well, he had a very good way of dealing with the situation into which he was placed. I mean, you know, look at his life and what he had to sustain. A crumbling empire on the Germanic front, not only as so many other things that happened were happening then.
And it's interesting, you know, you talk about your experience at the Citadel and you open doors for other people to be free to think about and discuss theirs. This note coming in from Kim. She said, hazing happens in many places. Example, a young 18-year-old naive girl being hazed at General Motors because she was the first female to ever be hired to handle engine blocks. She said, I have stories too. Hazing is, as what Jim says, brutality. Signed, Kim.
Well, Kim, you're right. I appreciate your comment.
And you know, it's gone on from the dawn of time, hasn't it? I mean, this is not uniquely American.
Initially, at the Citadel, for example, hazing was confined basically to personal services, like, you know, shining the upperclassmen's shoes, keeping his room clean, and stuff like that. Personal services. There wasn't a whole lot of this brutality involved. At least that's the way it was when.
But that's how it starts. But then it always rapidly. In any circumstance, it rapidly escalates. That famous psychological study where one group of people were prisoners and the other group of people were guards. And it was all just make-believe, and they had to stop the study because people were being damaged in significant ways.
Well, that's a very good broad way of putting it, but I mean, initially, going back to what we're talking about, when they first, you know, it was confined to personal services, basically, that upperclassman protected you, and nobody bothered you because of your service to him and his protection of you.
And funny, that...
The Commandant's office tried to outlaw all that, and then there was a reaction to it, and that's when a lot of the brutality and stuff, you know, came in.
But oddly enough, those same social dynamics obtain in American prisons to this day.
I guess so. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's real bad. I talked about that before on this program, referencing that book by Jessica Mitford.
Exactly. And, you know, there was that other study in which people were told on one side of the glass was a test subject, and on the other side of the glass was someone holding a little red button, and that they could administer shocks.
Well,
and lo and behold, the people with the button lost all consciousness of any sort of morality, and you know, the other person on the other side of the glass would act like they were really getting juiced, and they'd still be sitting there holding that button down. There's a dark and frightening side to the human psyche that when let go runs wild, Jim.
Look at Abu Ghraib.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, that's a good example of.
Yeah, I was reading an article in Salon today that Gene had sent along about the fact that a famous anti-torture memo, not pro-torture, anti-torture memo, that was authored by a lawyer named Zelikow, has finally been declassified as a result of a Freedom of Information request.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an argument that was put forward during the Bush administration saying, what we are doing, what you are talking about, is torture. And the Bush administration did everything in its power to destroy every copy of that memo, but one of them survived somewhere in the bowels of the Department of State. And it has been, and it's a damning indictment of those people, those sick, sick people in that era, in that time, that period of American history. One that we have not erased to this day, and one whose legacy provides that torture is still going on. We just don't use that word.
Well, I mean, you still have, for example, in the Marine Corps and other places like that, Code Reds. And that's just, that's not a figment of a few good men. I mean, that happens. And, you know, it's basically, well, the commander looks the other way, but as it goes on, and, you know, it's one of the ways to, you know, to bring into line somebody who's not doing what they should. I think it's also very well explained in that movie Full Metal Jacket.
Yep.
You saw how that ended up.
Indeed.
In the latrine. But anyway, just my comments about the Citadel and stuff that, you know, one thing, I never felt the need to exact upon anybody else what had been done to me. Never did.
Well, that's the mark of a fully functioning human conscience, Jim, and I've never had any doubt that you had one.
Well, that's just being a gentleman. A gentleman doesn't do stuff like that.
Very true. Jim, have a great weekend and a happy holiday weekend to you.
And a blessed Good Friday and a happy Easter to you and your family.
Thank you. Bye now. It's our buddy Jim. This is another one of those Where Does the Time Go programs, but we're done for the week. So we'll see you back here for Monday. It's not going to be a Moran Monday. It's going to be a very special Monday with a conversation featuring Charles C. Mann, the author of 1493. I'm terribly excited about it, and I hope you'll be here for it. I don't invite guests on this program very often because I figure that us just chatting together is guest enough, and you are expert enough under any circumstance. But Mr. Mann has put together a book that is absolutely stellar, 1493, and he'll be with us about 6:15 on Monday. Cross your fingers. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. We almost reached the week's fundraising goal. We're still just a few dollars away, so if you can help, please do. $5 at a time, $10 at a time, it all counts. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is the location for the button. It's right there on the front page, as is the little thing where you can see the progress we're making for the month. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist from time to time, Reverbo, my head writer, David in Tennessee, John Fox, who makes so many things keep going, including the fixes on the website. Thanks, John. Hope your weekend's going well. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks.